Our modern Western culture places little to no value on the power of our nightly dreams to inspire, shift, and reorganize our lives. This podcast demands a deep reconsideration of the role dreams play on our path to a more vital and meaningful life. The following is living proof of the life-affirming power of dreams to affect change and redirect the trajectory of our inner and outer lives. These are the dreams that shape us.
It's never easy to say goodbye to the people that we love. There's just really no way that you can ever truly prepare for it. But if we're able to open ourselves to our dreams for guidance during that time, it can often open this just deeply intimate and personal experience of helping you to relate to this experience of death. And it's so powerful and profound oftentimes, and the dreams often treat death with such a tenderness and such a poignancy and such a sweetness. I don't know, really know how else to explain it. But today, this week, you get to meet someone who is truly dear to my heart. And this is the first actual live conversation that I've had with her. So it's very exciting for me to share this with you. But her sister, Pauline, passed away this past summer, 2020, to pancreatic cancer. And she is here today to share with us this amazing procession of dreams that she had that has helped her move through this acceptance and this grieving of the passing of her sister. And it's such an amazing tale of how dreams can walk you, hold your hand through this process, and really offer you some dreams that are just so deeply meaningful and powerful for you, that in some grand and beautiful way can offer you a sense of peace, offer you a sense that there is a process that is unfolding, and that the sacredness of life and death is so deeply and truly honored by our dreams and by that source of wisdom within us that understands the natural way of things. And so here is my dear friend Suzanne. She's from the Netherlands, and I hope you really truly enjoy and are touched by this very heartwarming conversation we have. So thank you. Alrighty, well, welcome here today, Suzanne. Thank you for being with me today.
Thank you for inviting me, Stephen.
Absolutely. So I think to begin, since the talk is primarily focused around your sister, I think it would be a lovely gesture if we could honor who Pauline was a little bit, if you could give us an idea of who she was, kind of what she stood for, what she loved, and
definitely what she meant to you. I think that would be a good place to start.
Oh, yes. I'm the youngest one in a family of nine, and that's including my parents. My oldest is my brother Paul, and then there is my sister Marie-Louise, and then Pauline was born, and she's called Pauline because her brother Paul was crazy about her. So she got that name. And then we have a sister called Leonie or Lot, Monique, Nicole, and then me, and I'm Susanna. And Pauline, she always took care of me. Being the youngest one of a really big family meant that I was not very interesting for my teenage brothers and sisters who were busy doing all kinds of other stuff. And Pauline was the person who was among the elderly, the teenagers, while I was just a little child. And she saw me, and she took care of me. And we, from that point on, we really had a special connection, more of a mother daughter connection than a sister connection. So she was very, very dear to my heart. She went out to college when in 1974, and I was just a little girl going to kindergarten there. But when she got home, oh, it was like the light went on, and you know, she was full of stories and life and beauty. She was sparkling around my parental home. And when she left, I usually, for the rest of the week, missed her.
Yeah.
So we had a really close connection.
That's very sweet. Are there any specific memories of when she came home that you'd like to share?
One time she found out that, because in my parental home, the radio was always on, and I love music just like you do. And I was always singing along. And then Pauline found out that I was able to understand and translate English. And for me, it was the very normal that I could, because I heard English all day. Mm-hmm. And she really was impressed, and it made me feel so special, because there's somebody really impressed with things that were really normal for me.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, I think in your notes, that was one of the more tender things that was in the initial writing of it, was just this idea that at least one of your siblings was able to like really see you. I thought that was really sweet. And I feel like I play that role for a few people in my life. And so I know what that experience feels like, the kind of mutuality there. And I think you really need that to feel a deep sense of belonging with the people that you love. So that's sweet. Do you feel like that experience between the two of you continued into adulthood?
Yes, for a while, because she got two children, and her youngest one really cried a lot, and I was in college back then, so I came over during the holidays, and I took care of her youngest son, and I was always carrying him around, keeping him warm and comforting him. And she was really, really glad to have a few moments off as a mother. Because
I know how that is.
maybe from experience, you know how exhausting a crying baby can be at times, no matter how much you love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty wild when it just doesn't stop. It just feels like it'll never end, and how much that really does wear on you after a while.
Yeah.
What I think is so special about that relationship, though, is based on the way you tell it, it doesn't sound like she ever became bitter about having to kind of take on a secondary mother role to you?
No, because when my mother was giving birth to me, she was 38, and actually it didn't went very well. She had lost a lot of blood, and so she wasn't able to really take care of me in the first few days, those few days that are really important for the mother-daughter connection. Mm-hmm. And somehow Pauline felt that, and she stepped in, and she really comforted me, and she gave me the bottle and changed my diapers. And so it was from a very early early moment that she connected with me as a sort of mother figure.
Nice. Yeah, the image that I got was kind of like she volunteered it versus feeling imposed upon, like it was expected of her.
Yeah, nice. It's you know, from experience, like I do, that when you look at the baby, you just come mesmerized of, oh, yeah. And I think she had that looking at me.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we'll transition into 2011 when you participated at IASD's Yearly Dream Conference, which was held at Rolduc in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And Rolduc is a former convent, and you tell me you had a tour through the library by the bishop himself. That sounds super exciting. Can you give us a brief description of what the library looked like and kind of the energy in general at Rolduc?
Oh, Rolduc is a wonderful convent, but it has a lot of bitter history as well. Unfortunately, like many convents where people stayed indoors, students stayed indoors, things happened there that shouldn't have happened. And you could feel that energy, but you can also feel the sacred energy, especially in the library with all those books with holy scriptures. And the bishop gave us a tour. And during that tour, I also felt special because this wasn't ordinary. It was something special that you were allowed to get into that library.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at those old books and knowing that monks have had touched that, and taken it to their rooms and really analyzed those scriptures through the bone, That really connected me with, you might say, ancestral realms.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks later, I had this dream in which I'm in that same library and the bishop is giving me a tour, a personal tour this time. And during that tour, we get into his private room, and in that room is a couch, and on that couch my mother sits next to my sister Lot, Leonie, and everywhere around them there are more people in that room, and everybody is talking and drinking tea and having a good time, and I'm really surprised because I say hello to my mother and my sister, but everywhere on the floor are white flowers and nobody seems to see them except for me. And I'm really, I really cannot stand it if flowers just lie on the floor and don't have water, so I started to pick them up to make a bouquet and to eventually set that bouquet in water. So I was following the path of the flowers, and the flowers led me out of the room, picked them up, going out of the room into the hallway. And when I'm in the hallway, I see standing besides, against the wall, is an undertaker dressed in black with a high black hat on. And then that moment happens that you often have in dreams. You have a spiritual, a mental connection, and you know what the other person means. And I looked into his eyes and I knew that he was coming there to get my mother. And I felt really, really sad. But I knew it was inevitable, and I gave him the flowers. And after I had given him the flowers, I woke up.
Wow. With
a stomach full of grief.
Yeah.
It was a couple of years before my mother died, but my mother was already an age. She was in her 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was a very, very beautiful and impressive dream for me.
Yeah, really, absolutely.
It really helped me to be aware that I should visit my mother often and visit her with consciousness, the knowing that that she is going to go away, and that you should cherish every moment you have on this earth with her and create good memories for you and for your children.
Wow, I love that. Yeah, so even though it's like 2 years later, I feel like this is such an excellent example of how dreams do give us kind of a glimpse into the future and kind of offer us this kind of grace period to begin the process of preparing for their departure.
Yeah.
And obviously not every dream of a loved one dying means they're going to die. So
yeah,
we can't ever really be sure, but you kind of touched on it, but maybe if I could ask you more directly, was there something about this dream in particular that touched you specifically where you thought maybe it was more intentional and preparing you for that?
And the feeling of grief I had when I woke up, I had this stone in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother eventually died of problems in her gut.
Oh, wow.
The intensity of the look between me and the undertaker.
Yes.
You could also say that it is a prediction of my own death that will inevitably come.
All right. So it was like there was like a knowingness, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, an unspoken knowledge that usually happens in dreams of this kind.
Right.
That you look at another dream character and you just know what they think or what they mean or what they say. And often those words are unspoken.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite aspects of dreaming is that unspokenness. It's so powerful, and it's so palpable in dreams of just like that. It just kind of wells up in you within the dream in those moments, and there's really no question about it. I think I love the way, the delicateness that this dream's delicate way of having a path of flowers that lead you to this realization that death is coming for your mother. And the offering of the flowers to the undertaker feels like, to me, like a really powerful gesture. How do you look at that moment?
It's like an offering to the gods.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's the inevitability, sorry, I'm not English, of death. And you know what else, Stephen? Recently, my sisters and me have been sharing family photographs, and my sister Lot, she shared the wedding picture of my grandmother the mother of my mother, and her wedding bouquet really triggered me back to this dream.
Wow.
Because her wedding flowers in her bouquet, they went down to the ground, to her shoes. And it was she married in the 1920s of the last century. So that was totally hip at that time, I think. But it was the first thing that stood out to me, that those same white flowers, well, you know, it was a black and white photo, but I assume they were white. They really resembled the flowers that I was picking up in that dream.
Wow, that's really, really wild.
So in my eyes, it's really the mother connection, the female connection in my family.
I got that. Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, for me, looking at the dream outside, it feels like such like a surrender on your part. Like, I accept this. And if you must take her, please, you know, move on to her with this show of grace.
Like, yeah.
Instead of the sickle, you have this great image of death, like stepping to your mother with a bouquet of flowers. And there's like such like a beautiful like tenderness to that image. I love it. It's just really sweet.
Yeah, and she was really religious. Her being invited into the bishop's room is also really, really nice symbolic depiction of my mother's transition.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Nice.
Dreams provide a view into a person's tenderest inner places and convey better than any words what they are experiencing. When you picture yourself in their dream with them, like I did while hearing Suzanne describe her dream, it's as if you were invited into the private sanctuary of their soul. You share something sacred, and from then on your bond is like blood brothers. You carry a piece of that person with you. I knew Suzanne before hearing about her dream. We shared as friendly colleagues do. Dream workers are a close tribe. But now, after hearing about her dream, I picture myself there with her in the library with the bishop, then in the bishop's room, and I can hear the people talking. I can hear her mother and her sister, and see the flowers and the undertaker. I sense her connection with that character and why he's there. And it gives me a better feeling for Suzanne than I'd had prior. And now I think of her as more than a colleague. We've shared part of her soul. And this is the power of sharing dreams.
All right. So then I guess we'll move into the end of 2019. Your sister moves. She moves. You want to pick up there what happened around that time?
Yeah. My sister lived in a part of the Netherlands for quite some time, and her children grew up there. But eventually her son got married to a nice American lady, and that lady, of course, wanted a house of her own, because living with a mother-in-law, no matter how nice she is, isn't really the future you want when you are a wife. So that was the start for Pauline to look for a house for herself. And She sent me a mail that she was going to move. And I said, I mailed back to her, oh, okay, let me know when you are finished and we'll come and visit you. Mm-hmm. But a few weeks later, in the Netherlands, I'm diabetic. And I sent her a mail that in the Netherlands it had become the medical care would, would pay for the control, the life scan support. So I inject a little button in my arm, and I have a scan, and so I can monitor my blood sugar levels continuously whenever I want. And I was so glad that I mailed everybody in my whole family. I said, yeah, finally, my life's going to improve. And then Pauline mailed back to me and she said, I'm just reading this with one eye because, oh, I have such trouble with my vision. And I'm going to the doctor to have a check. And so I thought to myself, well, I will not bother her until I hear from her again. And just a few days later, she mailed with the terrible news that she had pancreas cancer.
Yeah. It's awful.
That's awful. And it's familiar in your family as well, isn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, my grandmother, when I was 13, passed away from it. It was, as soon as they found out, it was already pretty much deemed that she only had about 6 months to live, and I don't even know if she lasted that long. I was just talking to my parents about this the other night. My memories of that time are kind of, They're not as robust as I was hoping. I think maybe in some ways I've kind of blocked out some of that because that was my first real experience with death. And she was probably one of the most dear family members that I had to me. She like your sister, she really saw me, and it was really, really hard on me when she passed. So.
Oh, I can imagine. And being so young, that must have really, really made a huge impression. Maybe it was the first experience you had with death?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely one of the more defining moments of my life, I think. Especially since she meant so much to me that it was especially hard. And I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I think I'd already moved to 5 different states within the United States at that point. Mm-hmm. And we had just moved back to where my family was originally from, where she was living at the time, so that we could be with her. And so it was like there was all kinds of loss that I had already had in other ways, but this felt harder. And so, yeah,
it must have felt like the bottom from your existence was disappearing for you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, you know, the next dream I wanted to talk to you about was each year around Christmas time and January 6th, I organized a Holy Night. And this are 12 days between Christmas and New Year to really prepare yourself for the New Year. And last year, I organized, I always do that online. It's very, very much, it's fun, but it's also very cleansing in a way that you take the time off to prepare yourself in those dark days where the light just begins to emerge in strength again.
Mm-hmm.
And each night that year, I had a theme and an incubation. And this incubation was, what message has death for me? And that night, I had this dream. I was climbing stairs to go up to a playground for my children, but I cannot get through the door. I'm too tall. And you know, I'm you don't know, but I'm really petite. I'm not really big, so it was really amazing that I couldn't fit through the door. But I wasn't able to get into the playground. It was only for children, and I feel sad because I really wanted to see my sons. And my sons are already teenagers, but not in this dream. They were little children. And I look through the looking glass, and I only see a portal and two bathrooms, one for men and one for women. And that was the end of the dream. But when I started to associate the symbols, the bathroom I could not access, I pondered over the meaning. And several years ago, I dreamed about Pauline. I stand in line, a very familiar dream. I stand in line to go to the bathroom in a public space. And Pauline, she comes and she walks past me, and she goes into the bathroom before me and before everybody else that's waiting in line. And she wouldn't ever do that in waking life. Yeah. But I think that a bathroom is a place to release fluids, mm-hmm. the water of life. And in hindsight, I would say that it was the first symbol of Pauline who would departure, who would leave this earth.
Hmm.
And what you also mentioned about losing your childhood when you found out your grandmother was ill, very mm-hmm. ill, that also comes to mind, about not being able to get into the playground.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I read that dream, when you sent it to me, that was like how that dream like really touched me, was that it felt like there was a wall that was suddenly erected between me and the innocence of life and that carefreeness. Like all of a sudden life became really real at that point. And there's this amazing Mumford and Sons song lyric that says, death may take away your innocence, but it can't take your substance.
Oh, wow.
I always think that's like such a powerful line. And that's how I feel like that first experience of like a really big death that happened in my life. Like it took my innocence, but you know, I couldn't take my substance, and it did make me a different person after that, and in a good way, I would think. But yeah, so in this dream, do you see I'm guessing you see the two of your kids as you and Pauline?
Well, yeah, also Pauline had a special relationship with my children, because when I was pregnant, Pauline was the second person I told I shared with that I was pregnant, my husband being the first one, of course. Mm-hmm. And my Pauline was the godmother of my youngest, my second son.
Nice.
So in that way, they are also related to her.
Gotcha. Nice. Yeah, because I was seeing if you did kind of see the two of your children as like the two of you being more carefree and lighthearted with each other. And same with the secondary dream that you say about her button in front of you into the bathroom, that kind of felt like such a sibling thing to do, where
yeah.
you kind of like playfully
yeah. sibling does that.
Yeah. So I had like this vision of kind of that carefree and lightheartedness being walled off all of a sudden, where you know such a grave circumstance can put a wall between you and like yeah. a joyful experience of your sister and of life.
Yeah. And also the COVID that emerged,
yes,
in February, that really put a wall up, that made it impossible for me to visit her and to support her.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's like a duly there, and the COVID wall and just the life wall. That's,
yeah.
Man, very cool. So I think I guess we can move into the next dream with where you show up to meet with Pauline and Lot is there.
So Pauline had told me she had moved, and I wanted to visit her, but visiting her at the time when it was physically possible because she was ready with her new home wasn't possible anymore because of the COVID situation. Mm-hmm. And then I had this dream. And in my dream, I'm in my car. And Pauline, I'm driving towards the new home of Pauline to visit and to bring her a bunch of flowers. Like you normally do, and then when you visit someone's new home for the first time, you bring a gift, mm-hmm. usually a plant or some flowers. And I'm in my car driving to my sister when Leonie, Lot, my other sister, is standing outside her house, and she tells me that Pauline is not home. And she, mind you, that Lot, she walked over to my car. She was standing on the pavement before the house of Pauline, and she was walking towards me to tell me that Pauline couldn't make the appointment because she had already left.
Wow.
And I was really, really offended in my dream because, you know, we have made an appointment. So why make an appointment if you are not able to honor it? Eh? So that's when I woke up. And just like my former dream that I shared with you about my mother, she was sitting next to Lot, Leonie. Oh. And Lot for me is the Hermes in my dreams, who acts like a psychopomp and who guides the souls towards another form of reality. And in waking life as well, it was Lot who guarded my father when he passed away. We all said goodbye when my mother passed away. But now again with Pauline, it was her who didn't really mind the COVID restrictions, and she just went to Pauline and took care of her. She's wow. a former nurse, so she knows a lot about the different medications. And she really, really came through for her sister.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, I was going to ask you if she exhibited that same kind of Hermes quality in waking life. So that's really, really kind of special. And it's so like dreams to see that in your life and to translate that metaphorically in your dreams. So that's
pretty
wild.
We were talking, me and Lot, we were talking about this interview, and she didn't share the dream, but she said to me that she had very lucid dreams surrounding the death of Pauline that she had shared with Pauline.
Wow. Wow, that's very, wow. It's very sweet. So with this dream, where do you think your anger stems from in this dream?
Sorry, I didn't hear. Where do you think you're?
Where do you think your anger stems from within this dream?
Because she didn't honor the appointment between us. And I think that me having being diabetic, I had always assumed that I was going to be the first to go.
Hmm. So do you think the appointment and your anger is kind of metaphorical of her leaving sooner than you would have liked, or?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like that's such a powerful correlation to receiving hard news like you had just done before you had this dream, where, yeah, there's such a potent concoction of emotion that fills you initially before you have time to process. And I felt like this might be one of those dreams.
Oh, yes. And of course, the anger I felt in waking life when she died. Yeah, the Kubler-Ross stages. God damn it. Don't you die on me. Jeez. Yeah. Stay here, please.
How old was she?
My sister, when she died, she was 64.
Wow, yeah. So that's definitely much too early.
Yeah. Yeah, she had been a lifetime smoker, and even on her deathbed, she made a gesture between her fingers that she really wanted the cigarette. And of course, we gave her a cigarette. That's.
Wow. All right, so I think we'll move into March once the quarantine really goes. Wait, are we already there? Shoot.
Yeah.
We'll move into, I guess, the train dream, the first one you had.
Oh yeah. This was Pauline had one chemo, and it really went bad. Really, she went into what we in the Netherlands call a delir. She was dehydrated, and she didn't know exactly who she was and what she was, and she was in total confusion because of the chemo. And I really, really wanted to be there for her, and I couldn't. I wasn't allowed. And her son and her daughter really didn't want others to visit because of the anxiety that we would bring something, an infection or the COVID, and make Pauline even worse. So a couple of weeks before her death, I dreamed about a girl I knew from childhood. Not in waking life, but in my dream, I knew her from childhood. And we are on a train together. And she is getting off the train. And I panic because I'm here because of her. And I don't know why I'm on this train and where I'm getting off now. So she leaves the train, and before she goes, I panic and I say, I can't find my suitcase anywhere. And then she smiles at me, and she opens in the hallway a secret cabinet. And she opens it up, and there's my suitcase. And the next minute, she's gone. And I'm confused in the train with my suitcase, thinking, I was here because of her. And now I'm on this train to God knows where. She's gone outside. Let me get off, and let's see where this train, if I can transfer to another destination, to another destination. So I pick up my suitcase, and I walk into the station, and try to figure out where I am. And in the hallway of the station, I see Cologne, in Germany, on the sign. And I feel excited to go there because I really, really want to visit the beautiful cathedral there. It's on my list for a while. So I don't know if my pronunciation of Cologne is good. We call it Köln.
Okay.
It's in Germany.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you would pronounce it in German, but the way it's spelled in English would be Cologne.
Cologne, sorry. Yeah, I pronounced it French, I think, Cologne. But you see here a reference to Rolduc again. Mm-hmm. Because when I was in Rolduc, I really wanted to go there. And I was very sad because I don't have a car. I have a driver's license, but I wasn't able to get in my car and drive there because I went to Rolduc by train. And that's why in that dream I was really, really glad that I was finally on my way to visit there. Yeah. And the girl on the train, she was just like Pauline, so filled with life and joy. And like in Waking Life, I really, really wanted to be where she was. Because when you were next to her, it was full of life.
Wow. Yeah, when I first read this dream, I was a little confused how it related until I started reading your notes about its connection to Rolduc. And then after I read the next couple dreams of this series, and I was like, wow, this is just really fascinating. And just the way it brings you back into connection with Rolduc, which connects you to your mother's death. So it's like it's kind of bringing up this theme again. Mm-hmm. And then it also ties the death of your sister in connection to a new kind of historical holy place. And so both of your mother and your sister
in
are kind
cathedral,
of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite the correlation. It's really kind of sweet.
Yeah. And when I asked Pauline at that point in time if she wanted to talk with about her dreams with me, she shared one dream, and it was a visitation dream she had from my mother. She didn't share any details with me. She just mentioned that she had seen my mother in her dream, and that my mother looked so real for her. So, like it was a visitation dream.
Wow, that's really sweet.
Yeah, she also had a picture of my mother on her bedside table.
Yeah, so she must have felt really connected to her then.
Yeah, because that way she wasn't able to move around anymore, but she could look at my mother and my mother's eyes. And I think it was because of the inner peace it gave her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we get too far away, when you were talking about your sister in relation to this best friend of yours in the dream, I just actually had a ping. Just the way you described it, it sounds like it's almost, it makes sense that the dream would make her be kind of like a best friend. Especially if you associated the best friend with your sister, like a lifelong best friend, that just seems like such a sweet way for the dream to associate Pauline to that kind of
kind
of role.
And someone that shows you the way to a cathedral. And I'm not really very Catholic, but for me, a cathedral is a symbol of spirituality,
mm-hmm.
reaching up towards bigger connections.
Yes, I like that. One other thing I wanted to say, just because it was so, it's so fitting right now for the way that you just described her last night when I was preparing for this interview. I did a little visualization with the final dream that you shared and just kind of like brought myself into the dream and tried to see if there was anything that the dreams were asking of me in this interview. And maybe this would have been more appropriate when everybody else would know this dream, but maybe there'll be a interesting sense of irony here. But but yeah, the impression that I got of your sister was pretty much exactly how you just described her. She was very bubbly and very warm and yeah. very, she really kind of embraced me into her, and she seemed very thankful for the fact that this interview was going to take place, and she seemed like she felt very honored, and she felt very familiar to me in a way. It was very kind of interesting within that experience how familiar she felt. And I know with the connection that me and you have, it seemed appropriate that there might be some deeper spiritual connection between us and your family. And
yeah, you know what, when I asked her son and daughter if they were okay with me talking about dreams about Pauline, then her daughter said to me, "I think Pauline would be very, very honored."
Wow, that's awesome.
So that really, really is what you were saying just now. Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, it was just like a really touching, just a touching experience for me, because I mean, this story in itself already means a lot to me just because of my experience of pancreatic cancer in my mm-hmm. own family. And so to have this talk with you has felt very powerful and profound for me. And so that was just like the icing on the cake last night. Felt like I had her blessing to do it. And yeah, it was sweet.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that experience. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really wonderful.
So then you ended up actually staying with her for a time and helping with like hospice care. And you want to say anything about that time that you were able to have with her?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
In your notes, did you say that you were able to join her and help take care of her at the end?
When she was ill, I visited her, but she was only lying in bed. She like in my dream, she was already gone, spiritually, if mentally.
Dreams say so much in one scene or image. They can synthesize our thoughts, feelings, emotions, perceptions, and give us one image that sums it all up. For Suzanne, it's the scene when she arrives at her sister Pauline's house, and she's not there. It says so much with a picture, and no words are needed.
And there is one wonderful dream that I would like to share as we round up this interview. And that was another suitcase dream from yes. my mother.
Yes, please tell us that.
And that is the theme of suitcases as a symbol of the transition between waking realities. And in this dream, my mother is packing a suitcase and she throws in a sparkling white rag doll and a golden one and closes the suitcase with a firm gesture. So it's done.
Hmm.
And After Paulina's death, children asked us if we wanted to visit the house to get some stuff that belonged to Pauline and take it home. And that is when I dreamed that dream about that suitcase being closed by my mother. So, like, this is the transition is finished now. We are able to move on.
Wow.
So, in my eyes, the pictures, the symbolic pictures within me of my mother and Pauline as mother figure and my mother more as a crone figure are really nicely reflected in the dreams that I was able to share with you, Stephen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's something like so powerful to me about the firm gesture, the way she closes that suitcase.
Yeah.
There really is like a very palpable finality to that image and the feeling that comes across to it. I think I missed it when you just said it, but when did that dream happen in relation to her passing?
Oh, after she passed away. And okay. Before I went to her house again to pick up some belongings of her, I took home some dresses. So each time that I wear a dress of Pauline, it's like she is hugging me. I really, really love that.
That is nice.
And that was hard for me to be in her house without her being there. And it wasn't a house that I was really familiar with because she had just moved. But somehow I was, I don't know. She should have been there, you know?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, the finality that this dream kind of closes for you is both of these mother figures in your life, right? Is that essentially?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's such a powerful image. Oh, man. So I guess we can move into the final dream then, because they just kind of pick right up where the last one left off, in a sense. And in the notes it says, I dream that night that the family I am born in are all in a station. We have suitcases and wonder where we will go. Pauline is the first one to raise her hand to say goodbye to everyone and walks away with her suitcase.
Oh, okay.
That's actually the dream that I tried to enter last night when I was preparing.
Yeah?
And so I just thought it was so striking to have this image of all of you standing around wondering where you're going to go now.
Yeah. And she was a... She was the first in so many things. She was the first to leave the house. She was the first to get a steady boyfriend. She was the first to get children. And unfortunately, she was also the first to of us siblings to pass on. Wow. In that sense, she's the leader. Yeah, who knows where to go. So that's a wonderful dream, I agree.
Yeah, I just, there was something about the imagery of everyone wondering where to go now that just like, it just kind of left me with this gut punch of, you know, how do we move forward now? Or where do we go? Or how do we carry on? That kind of thing.
Yeah, where do we go now as a family? Because we all flew out and have our own families, but we still are part of the family we grew up in, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, wow. And Pauline was a vital part of that family, yeah.
Yeah, and just her like raising her hand to say goodbye felt like such a moment of closure. Maybe it's her way of saying goodbye.
Yeah. It's really Pauline was really very interested in dreams and astrology. And she educated herself in astrology. And often for my birthday, she would send me horoscopes.
Nice. Yeah. Do you know what her sign was? What her astrology sign was?
Yeah, lion.
Okay.
She was fierce like a lion. Yeah.
Yeah.
She would be raising her hand and saying goodbye and leaving everyone wondering where to go. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, and I mean, the way you described her earlier just was so full of life and kind of this larger-than-life kind of personality that seems to fit with Leo's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. So I guess to wrap things up here, I know a lot of people who may be uncomfortable with death may look at this experience that you've had, where you've had these series of dreams that have helped kind of prepare you for your sister's departure, that looking from the outside in, they could probably feel a little brokenhearted about it, or maybe like that would be too much for me. Mm-hmm. But for you, being the one who's received these dreams, do you feel like you received the closure that you needed? Like they helped you in a way that without them, maybe you would have felt way more, what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of, maybe you would have been more of a mess had you not had them?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was very, very important in my life. A very important part of who I am, who I still am today. And losing that in this reality, in this life, is a loss. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you have lost a loved one and are wanting to dream about them, have you tried asking for it? Ask with your heart before going to sleep. Dreams teach us that the connections through the heart live forever and are always there. Just make sure you are ready to receive the response. If you don't believe in an afterlife, your dreams won't try to change your mind. But they just might help to facilitate an experience that will help you decide what you believe for yourself. And you don't have to wait for a dream to use this connection that the heart gives us to everyone. If you are missing your loved one, speak to them through your heart. Speak to them as if they are there with you. Speak to them knowing, not believing, but knowing that they can hear you, that they care. They are following your life along with you, and they love you.
Yeah, I feel the same way. As hard as some of those dreams may be to have, there's such like a grace that comes with them as well that really helps you process on a deeper level, and it really they always like mean the world to me to have those dreams. And
did you have dreams about your grandmother?
You know, when she passed, I was under the impression that you would receive dreams like that from people that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come for a long time. And it really broke my heart for a long time. But the first time that she appeared in my dream was, it was probably a couple months after I had kind of my big spiritual awakening, where I finally stumbled upon some source of meaning for myself and a greater understanding of my place in the world. And I had this like celebration dream where it was like my soul was congratulating me, and the dream began at the very end of like a ceremony that was held in my honor.
Oh, wow.
And I was coming off the stage. It was kind of like a, it looked like an auditorium or like a movie theater almost, where there was like a very clear stage up in front and seating behind it. And so the dream picks up with me coming off the stage, and I'm met by all kinds of family members, and they're congratulating me and thanking me, or I'm thanking them, I should say. And I keep having this nagging feeling that somebody really, really special is waiting for me at the back. And so I keep inching my way closer and closer, and finally I look up towards where I know I need to end up, and there she is, and she's just beaming.
Oh,
and
wow.
She just looks so proud of me, and she gives me just like the biggest hug, and it just, I just like melt into her. And
oh wow.
It's still like, it's so palpable even now, like every time I like rehash this with somebody, it totally brings me back right into that experience of seeing her again. And it was like I could feel her, like, and she felt so real, and it's almost like you could, you know, smell her perfume. And it was just like so touching. And to have her there for that moment of like really celebrating how far I'd come, because I had kind of just come out of like a really deep depression, and so it was like a pretty powerful moment for me to be kind of celebrated for going through the depths of hell and coming back out. That was, it was almost like that my dreams had waited for me to
be ready.
Yeah, and to when she would finally be there, it would be for an experience that like would really, really mean something to me.
Mm-hmm. And grand entrance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, and she's appeared every so often in other ways, but yeah, it's that was the biggest one though.
Wow, thanks for sharing. This is an awesome experience. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for bringing it up. I was going to maybe mention it, but I, at this point in the interview, I totally forgotten about it. So thank you. So do you have any final remarks or comments on these dreams, or your sister in general, or?
Oh, well, my sister has been and still is very important for me. And those dreams are like, well, like a little treasure closet, treasure trunk that I can open up. And if I open that suitcase up filled with these dreams, it fills me with love and affection and acceptance. So in that sense, the female side of my family has given me so much support that it really feels like a gift.
Wow, that's very, very beautiful. Wow. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. This is still very fresh for you, and I just am honored and humbled by your bravery to speak with us on this and to share this really heartwarming and just beauty-filled experience that you had. So thank you.
Well, thank you for all your good questions and your wonderful associations with my dreams. It has been a gift. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Martin Prechtel wrote, "Grief is praise, because it is the natural way that love honors what it misses. And on behalf of Suzanne and all of my family, for everyone that we have lost to cancer, we honor you. And know that we love you and we miss you deeply.
That Shape Us is a podcast created and co-hosted by J.M. DeBoard and Stephen Ernenwein. The original music you grooved on during this podcast is written and performed by Steve, a.k.a. AQ the Dreamwalker. Check out Steve's dream-inspired hip-hop and singer-songwriter music on Spotify under AQ the Dreamwalker. Or get more intimate with his music and dreams at AQ the Dreamwalker YouTube channel. You can contact him on Instagram at AQ_Dreamwalker. I'm J.M. DeBoard, and I'm the author of 3 books about dreams, including the Dream Interpretation Dictionary and Rad Owl's Crash Course in Dream Interpretation. I can teach you dream interpretation that's simple, effective, and modern at Rad Owl's Dream School. dreamschool.net. Steve and I send out a super extra big and special thank you to our guest, Susanna Von Dorn. Susanna, thank you for sharing your dreams and your heart with us and with our listeners. Her website is fabulous. mindfunda.com, mindfunda.com, chock full of information about dreams, spirit, myth, in the teachings of Dr. Carl Jung. If you love what we're doing on this podcast, and we really hope that you do, hey, sharing is caring. Please spread the word to your family, to your friends, that dreams are deeply meaningful. Help us to bust this myth that dreams are meaningless. Dreams truly can shape our lives. For Stephen Ernenwein, I'm J.M. DeBoard. Thank you for listening, and happy dreaming.
Hey everyone, it's Steve. I just wanted to say that if you were interested in Suzanne's 12 Holy Nights event that she holds every year, I definitely encourage you. If you're kind of in the spiritual but not so religious, but you really enjoy the Christmas season, she offers just this amazing program at the end of the year that goes from Christmas Eve to the Epiphany, which is January 6th. It's the 12 days of Christmas, essentially. It's the Holy Nights, we call it, because it's a dreaming event. And I've done it with her several years, and it's amazing, and she does such a phenomenal job curating this event and walking you through it and providing you with all this rich symbolism and mythology and incubations and information. And every year she picks a different mythological lens to view this time period through, and it's just phenomenal. It's so good. One of the years I just had this amazing map of the entire year for myself, because essentially each night you dream for a different month throughout the next year. So it's kind of, you have an opportunity to kind of glean insight into what your coming year is going to look like based on the incubations that you do. So it's amazing. And one year in particular, it just was like so prophetic the entire way through. And it just gave me such an amazing roadmap. So I encourage you to check it out. Go to mindfunda.com and look up the 12 Holy Nights. And you'll be set. So thank you.